Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Eric Beinfort on short notice. Karain was busy. Karain didn't want to do it with me. I knew Eric would be there for me, and we're going to talk on his show on Spike Week tomorrow. So we have plenty to talk about. Obviously, this is the emergency podcast. This is the third emergency podcast that we've had to do in the last week. Gretch and I were literally recording when the Deshaun Watson news broke. Karain and I did the Devontae Adams emerge. I mean, just it's been fucking nuts, man. The NFL, they definitely do not want anyone to care about baseball. They're just like, you like baseball? Well, joke's on you. It's all the NFL you could ever take right now.
Right. It's March Madness season, right? I get super into March Madness. A lot of the country gets into March Madness. Baseball is coming up in like 2 weeks, and the NFL is just flipping the bird to all these people and taking over the news cycle every other day. You mentioned the emergency pod stuff. You know, we're in the content space trying to plan out shows and podcasts and articles and all that kind of stuff. And every day I feel like you like have a show in the evening, you have something planned and boom, somebody gets traded or something great, right? Deshaun Watson. You know, that was, I guess, the most recent news, but there was even other stuff you probably could have had emergency pods on, right? Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, even the downstream effects from all of that, right? Like what the hell's going on with Seattle now, blah, blah, blah. It's just total anarchy. And I listened to one of your podcasts recently where you talked about, you were specifically talking about best ball, but you're trying to like take a step back away from drafting and stuff during
100%.
This.
And I feel so good about that right now because do you know how much Chiefs shit I would have been drafting? Do you know how much Mahomes and Tyreek, like I'd be so underwater. So it just, and not to say that if you are drafting right now, there's you couldn't be profitable doing it. Like I think a lot of smart drafters are probably making massively plus EV teams in what's the big board on yep. Underdog right now. Yeah, like yep. The rookie sophomore. Like I think there are lots of ways you could be doing it profitably. I just know I'm going to be 500 teams deep by August, and I'm just going to want to quit. So I'm giving myself some mental health time right now.
Right. So that's kind of what I started to do. I don't even know if it's been mental health because I just been looking at other stuff. But from a fantasy football perspective, I feel like every day I'm overwhelmed when I try to start digging back in because so much has changed. And from like, if you are drafting right now on Underdog, it's like you have to reset your entire brain every couple of days because it's, you know, Brady comes back, right? We didn't even talk about.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Back. You know, so every day, you know, and Tom Brady was like undrafted or like even in like the Superflex contest, right? Because everybody was just, why would I draft a guy that, you know, is 50-50 to retire and he comes back? It's just been so much anarchy. It's like hard to wrap your head around. And I think this one is maybe not the least impactful from a fantasy football perspective. But it's not at the top of the list. But from a real life football perspective,
changes everything.
It changes absolutely everything about the entire NFL.
Because the AFC has been doing this arms race, right? You know, the Raiders trade for Devontae Adams, the Broncos get Russell Wilson, and the Chargers sign like every marquee defensive free agent, and they probably are in a market for a wide receiver now at 13. I mean, maybe they think it's Josh Palmer, maybe they don't. But, you know, Keenan Allen's 30. They did pay Mike Williams a lot of money. I wonder if seeing some of these extension numbers. I wonder if they feel bad about that. I wonder if they think that maybe they could have used that money in a more intelligent way. But Mike Williams is a good player. And, you know, look, the Chiefs are paying the piper for how badly they've drafted since they took Patrick Mahomes. You know, they trade a first round pick for Frank Clark. He's useless, basically. People say he played well for them the year they won the Super Bowl in the playoffs, but who the fuck cares? And even trading the first round pick for Orlando Brown, who's really good, you know, that's fine that he's really good, but that's not cost controlled labor, right? You're paying him full price. Hardman, useless. CH, useless. I guess Thornhill is the best they've done early in the draft. And they do have a good offensive line, but the defense is pretty weak. And, you know, I'm probably the last person left on earth who still is thinking that Smith-Schuster is up to 140 targets and being productive in Kansas City. But I think pretty clearly Kansas City takes a wide receiver, either with pick 29 or they package up some of these picks they got to get up higher in the draft. But their offense is going to look so much different. And, you know, I wonder if Kelsey takes a step back, and he already kind of took a step back last year, but if Kelsey is like, you know, late stage Tony Gonzalez or Zach Ertz, where he can't move after the catch at all, I mean, it's going to be a huge problem for them.
Yeah. I mean, Tyreek, say whatever you want about him, both as a football player and as a human, but he was everything for that offense. When you just have a guy that runs a 4.2, is absolutely electric after the catch, and defenses have to, the first thing, Kelsey is great, but the first thing you have to do when you line up to face the Chiefs is account for Tyreek Hill, right? And the Chiefs had to adjust, right? You know, you remember very clearly.
Oh, I sure do.
The too high shell, right?
And they did. And they did adjust. And it was just all getting Tyreek the ball close to the line of scrimmage. I mean, that was their whole shift in the offense, was having, you know, DeMarcus Robinson be the guy who ran the deep routes, and then having Tyreek catch the ball close to the line of scrimmage, which was a good solution. That now that those are going to Hardman or Smith-Schuster.
Or, you know, so I'm fascinated to see. I agree that I think they should and will take one of these receivers, and I think it makes sense for them. But I'm fascinated to see how they go about, like, what archetype they're going to kind of be looking for, because, you know, they've been modeled around this Tyreek Hill thing for so long with him as the lid lifter. And then, you know, he's versatile. He's much more versatile than people think.
For
he's
sure.
He's a little guy that is super fast. That's his biggest strength. But you saw this year that if they need him to just run 3-yard hitches and get the ball into his hands to keep moving the chains, he can do that too.
He can do that.
And so he's a better real life player, I think, even than people will give him credit for. But, you know, these rookies can't do that. You know, I think you do too. I love Jameson Williams.
That's who, by the way, I think if they stick at 29, I think that's who they take, because at least he replaces the down the field stuff. He gives them someone who can just run a 4.4 in a straight line and get deep. And then, look, I mean, obviously Smith-Schuster is not what we thought he was when he was a young player, but he's very capable of running 6-yard slant routes and just being like fancy Julian Edelman. And, you know, maybe that means that the Chiefs have the 7th best offense in football, which probably leads them to like 9 wins this year. But right. I, you know, and again, you know, the other thing is, like, Mahomes is still the best quarterback. Like, and I know everyone loves Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers. Like, I know everyone loves all these guys, but, like, and I know that everyone's last memory of Mahomes was literally the worst game of his career. I mean, I don't think he's ever played worse than that second half, but you do have quite an advantage when Mahomes is the guy that you have solving all these problems.
Right. And we're also going to find out how much of this was Mahomes versus Tyreek.
That's
right?
True.
I really believe that Mahomes is still, you know, he's not going to be that. It's hard. It's like when Brady lost Randy Moss. He was still Tom Brady, but he wasn't throwing, you know, a zillion touchdowns and all these bombs and stuff. But I think what is really going to be fascinating for the Chiefs and for Mahomes is how they attack, you know, filling this spot, seeing what teams did to them last year, right? Like with the too high bullshit and with and just how teams schemed for Tyreek. You know, why was Kelce just eating constantly over the middle against linebackers, against safeties, is because he does still have that yak ability. He is still just more athletic than the guys that are covering him. And when two guys are dedicated to Tyreek or whoever down the field, or even just Tyreek on the outside, you know, that allows Kelce to do that. Are they making a schematic shift, right? Do they go after Drake London or Garrett Wilson or kind of a, somebody like that?
I hope not Drake London.
But you know what I mean? Do they go from, okay, teams were taking this away, we can just run McColl down the field or someone else, you know, maybe they sign Will Fuller or whatever.
Which by the way, is what Hardman was drafted to do way back when, is they
he's
were like,
not good.
He's just not good. Yeah. No. He's not. Now the Fuller thing that you just mentioned is really interesting. Obviously I think that is who, like, us fantasy nerds would like them to most add.
Oh, yeah.
But it does feel like he's just going to Cleveland. Like it feels like they're waiting, like, probably because Corain told me this the other day. I didn't know this, but apparently this finger injury he had was, like, horrible. And apparently he had to have a second surgery on it. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if his medicals are holding that up at this point. But I mean, yeah, Fuller to the Chiefs would be how high would his ADP get if he signed with the Chiefs? I mean, I think fantasy Twitter could push him into, like, the sixth round, probably.
100%. That range is already kind of, like, sketchy and getting blown up a little bit now. You know, the Renfros of the world were there. You know, now who knows where Waddle goes with Tyreek there. You know, that range had already gotten kind of murky, and everybody just loves Will Fuller. And obviously with Watson, we know what he can do. So he would definitely get steamed like crazy. What do you think? Do you think that they do go after? They got some really serious wide receiver holes to fill, even with Juju, because, right, Pringle and Robinson are both gone.
They're both gone.
So they just got to bring in bodies, you know, for sure. And there's not a lot left out there on the free agent market with this trade. They should have done this. They should have paid Tyreek before this whole shit show of an offseason. If they really wanted to keep him.
But I don't know if they did. Like, I think inside that building, I think they're like, it's time for us to pay the Piper for drafting so bad. Yeah. So, cause someone's gotta be on the chopping block, right? It wasn't gonna be Mahomes, wasn't gonna be Kelce. They didn't pay Mathieu, who is was bad last year, but was kind of the last couple of years their best defensive player. And I think they're just looking at it like, shit, you know, what did Tyreek get? $75 million guaranteed over 4 years.
Four years.
It's a lot of money for a dude who's going to be 30. And not that I think he's going to be bad as a member of the Dolphins, or that we're going to see some dramatic decline from him. But it's just like, you can't have the highest paid quarterback, the highest paid tight end, and the highest paid wide receiver at the end of the day, pretty much.
When two of them are aging, right? Kelce, we're nearing the end of Kelce, and we're not, you know, Tyreek's still playing at the top of his game, but for how much longer?
But two more years of him. And then you have the final 2 years of him still being good, but, you know, kind of like, oh, you need to run these routes now. And we got to have someone else to take the jet sweeps, you know, you don't want Tyreek getting smoked either is the thing. I mean, I guess, like, it sucks as someone who wants to see the Chiefs do well, because clearly this is them entering into, like, a small rebuild. Mm-hmm. But also for, like, fantasy, it's very exciting because it's like, we've never seen anything like this. You know, we've never seen Mahomes without a guy that we know is getting 160, like 10 targets a game. And it could just be anything, right? It could be Juju. Maybe Hardman does something. I also the fact that Robinson is not on the roster at all is just going to save me a lot of heartbreak, because I would be taking Robinson, who's so useless. And I know I'd be taking him in the 20th round of these underdog drafts. And now it'll be, I mean, you know, Cornell Powell or Justin Watson or whatever, they do have these guys on the roster, and who knows if any of them are any good. I don't know. And Noah Gray, who actually played a lot last year as a run blocker. I've been deep in Kansas City beat writer stuff, because Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going in the eighth round of these drafts. And the beat writers don't think that Darrell Williams and Jerick McKinnon are going to resign. They both think they're going to sign with someone else. Now, you know, maybe now that they have a little bit extra cap room, maybe they're like, okay, we'll give you $3 million. We'll give you $1.5 million and just bring them back. But it is just like, I mean, the Chiefs have been the best offense in the NFL for 4 years, and the whole complexity of it all changes now. It's just wild.
Yeah. It's, you know, doing this in an instant reaction, it's really difficult to kind of process your thoughts, because on one hand you have this long track record of
the,
like,
long
you said,
prior,
the best offense in the NFL, say whatever we want about, right, the Bucks and the Bills and all that kind of stuff. The Chiefs were still the best offense. And I mean, seeing what they were able to do, right, when everybody counted them out midseason with the too high nonsense, and then just bounce right back and just dominate everybody down the stretch. Clearly, you know, the coaching and the talent was there. And so on one hand, you have that to lean on. You're like, okay, look, Tyreek is awesome, but now they have resources to be able to go replace that. You can't one for one replace Tyreek, but you get a rookie in there, maybe you get a quality free agent in there, and you still have a really freaking good offense with a good offensive line and the best quarterback in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. But then on the flip side, you're like, Tyreek Hill was everything about that offense. Like, probably even more than people give him credit for. Like, we saw when he was out. Look at the times when he's out, right? He pulls his hammy or whatever.
That Broncos game, they looked so bad. They looked awful. So bad in that Broncos game. Yeah.
Because they just, even like, McColl is fast, but like, he can't do.
He just can't do anything. He can't catch.
Like, you can. He can't. Once you get the ball in his hands, like, he's really fast and athletic or whatever. Yeah, sure. But the problem is he can't get open to get the ball in his hands. And he's not even like really particularly good in like the screen game. So it's just a disaster. But so that you have these totally conflicting ideas where it's like, I want to lean on, like, I'm not going to bet against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Travis Kelce with assuredly Juju and assuredly other good weapons, right? They're not going to go in with Cornell Powell and Justin Watson starting on the outside. And so, you know, that the talent is in general going to be there from like an overall macro view, but then you have, you know, what we've seen from them, how much of that can they, what percentage of that can they reproduce without Tyreek? And I don't really have a good answer. It's a very, very difficult question to try to wrap your brain around.
I mean, I think it will just be a matter of not replacing, but of structural changes. Cause I don't think there's any way you replicate that role. Like, the whole idea behind drafting Hardman was like, okay, you know, if Tyreek can't play for a year or for 10 games or whatever, we'll just have some guy to be fast. And, you know, they didn't know what Hardman was going to be, but now with an entire off season to prepare, I wonder if it's more like, you know, Andy Reid's Eagles offenses, where it's a lot of like short to intermediate stuff. You know, obviously Terrell Owens was so great on those teams, you know, just being like a boundary wide receiver. I mean, maybe they do draft Drake London and they just say, we need someone to go win one-on-one against cornerbacks. Maybe they play more two tight end stuff. Yeah. You know, they like Noah Gray or whatever. I mean, that would be depressing, but maybe that is what they end up doing. I mean, and it, you know, the crazy thing is even with Tyreek on the team, the second half of the season, they were like a super play defense, grind the, you know, run a lot more, you know, Derek Gore's in there. Like, they were like they kind of turned Mahomes into a game manager in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Short passing game. Right. And he proved that was a flaw that people thought he had, right. He always wants to hit the home run. And he brought that on himself a little bit for a while. He did want to, you know, he runs around like a madman and tries to throw the ball down.
He did it in the fucking Bengals game.
Yes. But he got better, for sure got better, and the scheme got better, getting the ball out of his hands and getting it into Tyreek and Kelce and whatnot. And thinking this through now, like, looking at their picks, their updated picks that they have now, they can throw a lot of good resources at the weaponry, at wide receiver. You know, I know they have Noah Gray, but, you know, they can do some fun stuff with some young guys and stock up, right? So that you're not reliant upon, you know, they have two firsts, two seconds, two thirds, and two fourths this year. If they draft multiple wide receivers so that you don't have to rely upon, like, that's the thing. Like you said, they're kind of paying the piper because they were so reliant. They tried to like middle between the Rams and like, you know, the Chargers and the Bengals and stuff.
Yeah.
Where they would make trades when they were like, shit, our offensive line is terrible. We gotta
do something, like just anything.
But then they would keep picks and take CEH and Hardman and stuff. And when you miss, then on those guys when you're in your Super Bowl window, it buries you.
It buries you. Like
the margins are too, you have to thread such a tight needle to beat the Bills and the Bengals and the Chargers, right? And the 49ers and the Bucks and all of that. So you can't miss on those really critical picks when you don't have the quantity.
You know,
now they have the quantity.
I do just want to say this though, you know, people are, and I think Bills fans are really excited about this and they should be or whatever, but the Bills window of having to do something like this is not far away now at this point. Diggs is 29 or 30. They're going to, and Gabe Davis is going to get his audition as a starting wide receiver this year. And then it'll be time to pay him. Mm-hmm. And Jameson Crowder's on a 1-year deal. And that, you know, it's like every team has to do this. And Allen's mega extension kicks in this season, if I remember correctly. And it's just like every team has to do this. Every team that has these great players finds themselves in a position to have to do this. And it just so happens that the Chiefs made it really hard on themselves the combination of the Frank Clark trade, whiffing on the CEH pick, and then trading the first for Orlando Brown, just like, it just killed them. I mean, it just murdered them because Orlando Brown, I guess, is a plus starter or whatever, but those other two decisions are just like actively ruining your roster. And the first round picks, you know, it's such a funny offseason for the salary cap is fake people. Yeah. Because, you know, they're like, oh, you know, the Saints were all this far over the cap and they got underneath. But it's like, no, their roster sucks now. Like they
horrible.
Just had,
yeah.
It's horrible. And so, you know, the salary cap is more adjustable than it is in the NBA or something like that. But you still have like real consequences for ruining these first round picks.
Yeah. And like, you know, Rams fans are probably feeling good, and the Piper is going to be coming for them really, really shortly too. Same thing. That's just how it works, but kind of sort of pivoting a little bit into the Dolphins side for the last couple of minutes, because they're obviously two polar opposite teams taking polar opposite approaches to things, right? The Chiefs are trying to get out ahead of what 100%, you're 100% right, what the Bills are going to have to do, what the Rams are going to have to do. The Bucks are going to have to do it. You know, they're definitely really kicking the can down the road, like trying to win right now, bringing Brady back and franchising Godwin, etc. The Dolphins are in this weird middle ground where they're not bad enough to tank, and they're definitely not going to, you know, the ownership and stuff is definitely not going to be willing to tank, but they're not good enough to win a Super Bowl. And yet they make this trade for this superstar wide receiver while the best team in the NFL, one of the best teams in the NFL, the Chiefs, is trying to get out ahead of this issue that they've created for themselves. And it's a really weird kind of dichotomy in the NFL where you have tons of teams going for it, also because there's more playoff spots and whatever, you're incentivized to get to the playoffs. But I don't know what the right answer is. You know, I just saw tons of people like on my timeline, my little small bubble, that are just like thrashing the Dolphins for this. Like, you're not a Super Bowl contender. You can't trade all this for a 28-year-old wide receiver. And they're kind of like applauding the Chiefs, but it's like this is a consequence of the Chiefs' past mistakes. Whereas maybe this will be a mistake for the Dolphins. I don't know.
I mean, the number 29 pick seems like a fine. It seems fine. The if you wanted to be snarky about it, you'd say maybe it's not a great idea to pay a 28-year-old wide receiver who's played the majority of his career with the best quarterback in the NFL. Like, maybe Tyreek doesn't look that good catching passes from Tua. Although, you know, Tyreek did play pretty well with Alex Smith, and Alex Smith is kind of like the best case outcome for Tua at this point. And I like Tua. Actually, Tua, I believe, was my second most drafted quarterback on Underdog last year. And now I think probably he will get, it's a good question. I wonder how expensive he will end up getting this year. Cause the Dolphins like to run their quarterback near the red zone too. Like, I think him and Brissett combined for like 11 carries inside the five or something like that. Now they have better running backs this year, so maybe that won't happen. But I mean, the Dolphins could score a lot of points, right? I mean, they could be the immediate concern I had was, does Jalen Waddle top out at like 130 targets? And I just put that in a Slack channel, and Leone told me he thought he wasn't really that worried about Waddle at all. And maybe it's right to not be worried about him at all. And Tyreek is actually just creating a ton of space for him. The concern would be Tyreek played 56% of his snaps out of the slot last year. And if him and Waddle are kind of cannibalizing those targets together, like Tyreek will still get his from the outside, I think, but I don't know if Waddle would be as effective playing on the outside.
Yeah, I agree. And it's an easy comp to make because of the coach, but it feels just so much like kind of the 49ers of last year. We expect with Mike McDaniel there, they're going to run a little bit more. They're definitely going to use the backs. I think Chase Edmonds is a great pick, and Mostert. Chase Edmonds is a great pickup fit schematically with Tua, right? Obviously, Tua doesn't have the strongest arm in the world.
Right.
And Chase Edmonds is really explosive.
Yeah.
For whatever you want to say about him, he's really explosive. And so now you just have all these guys that really fit with Tua. It's just they can't all get there. Like, this team isn't going to throw 700 times. And so how, you know, Gesicki, you could make the case for all of them, right? You have two of the fastest freak wide receivers in the NFL out there. So maybe this opens things up for Edmonds, right? They signed Teron Armstead too to play left tackle, which should be a huge boost to the worst offensive line in the NFL. Maybe that opens up the middle for Mike Gesicki, right? Now Gesicki's getting that Kelsey and Kittle
the Kelsey volume, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so I don't know. The first take for me was, I mean, this is certainly not profound, but it's going to be really tough for me to take Tyreek Hill in fantasy drafts, just because I would think that Waddle kind of maintains that more short area role a little bit than Tyreek. Now Mike McDaniel's not going to like not get the ball to Tyreek.
Well, what if Tyreek gets Debo touches though, right? That's the thing that will hold over it is what if Tyreek gets 80 carries and 125 targets? You know, could be a huge smash. Yeah. So let's see. Let's look at I'm going to pull up the underdog ADP right now and see where I think Tyreek could possibly settle. All right, pre-draft best ball. So I think as of right now, Tyreek is going as the wide receiver 5, and that has him on average as the like 9th or 10th pick. So these are what's interesting is Waddle was going as a top 10 wide receiver, and no way that's gonna hold, right? I think Waddle settles as the wide receiver 21 looking at it right now. So that's right in between Elijah Moore and Tyler Lockett. But I think Reek goes to where maybe CD's going right now, around 20th. Yeah. That I think that seems about right. And that is an inflection point for me where I'll probably end up just taking a bunch of him and just being like, it's fucking Tyreek Hill. Like, how bad can it possibly be?
Right. And the wide receiver pool this year is kind of funny because we have a lot of these situations. A, there's been so much quarterback movement, which has shaken things up, but you don't also really get Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill changing teams in an off season.
That's true. Yeah.
As well. And so that, you know, you mentioned Tyler Lockett, right? Now you have two really talented wide receivers in Seattle that who the hell knows what's going to happen with them. So it's a really wide open wide receiver class that I still, again, haven't really wrapped my head around.
It's actually insane. Like, I don't think there's any way you can have a definitive stance right now because most years in football, we see a decent amount of player movement or anything, but nothing like this, right? So Adams traded to a different team. Tyreek traded to a different team. Debo just had the most efficient season of like any player of all time. So who knows if he should even go where he's going. AJ Brown barely played last year. CeeDee Lamb has never played without Amari Cooper. So who knows there. Jalen Waddle just got a new teammate. DK Metcalf has Drew Lock as his quarterback. DeAndre Hopkins is 30 and didn't play last season. Keenan Allen is 30. Deontay Johnson is going to be playing with Mitch Trubisky. Who knows who DJ Moore's quarterback is going to be. Terry McLaurin's never played with like just going through this list. This is fucking nuts. It's like all of these guys are in a different situation than they've ever been in their career.
Yeah, and you didn't even get to Amari is gone out. You know, now Amari's in Cleveland. And what if they bring in Will Fuller? There's so many still moving parts that we haven't figured out that I mean, it's gonna be an awesome like draft season. To me, this is way more even exciting than last year, where you know, we had some rookies. We didn't really have like the free agent thing. Like Galladay, I guess, was the main like big.
Yeah, Galladay wide receiver mover. Galladay was the team changer. Diggs was the team changer the year before.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, really, in terms of like big player movement, we just didn't have it affecting the pass catchers that much.
And that's just where, you know, this is a little bit of a cop out, and I don't mean it to be that, to be a total cop out, but it's just something we've seen for so long where the market's going to get really sure about a lot of situations that there is absolutely no certainty in, right? They're going to get really sure. My guess would be they're going to get really sure that Seattle's offense is going to be terrible. And we're going to push DK Metcalf way down. And like you mentioned, like, it's still fucking Tyreek Hill. It's still fucking DK Metcalf. Like
DK Metcalf, I believe his best fantasy game of the season was with Geno Smith. I'm gonna confirm that. So I'm not totally wrong. Yeah. Okay. So he had the 3-touchdown game against Detroit. So that's not true. But his second best fantasy game of the season was with Geno Smith, and he had that 80-yard touchdown against the Saints with Geno too. It's fucking DK Metcalf. I'm not going to be taking Keenan Allen over DK Metcalf. No. Like I'm trying to win $1 million, dude.
Right. And so that's the thing, right? Everybody's going to get really, really sure. The market is, I'm not saying people won't have differing opinions, but the market is going to get so certain, like on this Dolphins thing, everybody is going to get so certain on how this is going to play out, right? And my gut take is people are going to be fairly out on Tyreek Hill. They're going to be like, nope, Waddle is the short, right? We saw last year, Waddle is the low A-dot guy. Tua is a low A-dot. You know, he doesn't have a good arm, and it's going to be a low-volume team. I can't take Tyreek Hill. Well, what, like you said, what if this is Tyreek Hill? I love Jalen Waddle. He's awesome. But this is Tyreek Hill. Like, they didn't trade all this for Tyreek Hill to not use him, to use him like freaking DeSean Jackson. Like, that's just not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen.
So there's going to be an inflection point, right, where all of this makes sense to kind of move against the market. And that's the big thing that I'm trying to make sure to keep my, you know, we all get really excited when these things happen. You give your takes and you fire off quick takes on Twitter or whatever. But making sure I'm like, okay, everybody else is thinking this. And that was kind of my, like, kind of wrapping up. Tua, everybody is, you know, you mentioned that you're still a little bullish on Tua. So am I. Everybody is absolutely out on Tua.
Like, yeah.
There is never a news story that could even relate to Tua where Twitter isn't just like,
this guy sucks. Like Teddy Bridgewater signs a 1-year, $5 million deal. And everyone's like, ah, that's the end. That's the end of Tua in Miami. It's Teddy time. You know, it's like, so I get it because Tua, what does every young quarterback that comes in the NFL now do? You know, they're all super athletic. They're fast. They're big. They're strong. You know, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert. And then, you know, we have like the Malik Willis stuff this year. And Tua is not any of those things, but it's like, I don't know. He just set the record for completion percentage in a month. He completed like 81% of his passes for 4 games straight. Like he's not bad. Maybe he'll never be a top 15 quarterback and maybe they'll never win their division or whatever. But I don't think it's fair to say he's like bad.
No, this guy before, and maybe the injury is what was a huge deal, the hip thing. Maybe that just has set him back
for forever.
It absolutely could be true. But this was the dude setting, he got Jalen Hurts benched in the national championship game in which he came back and won. And you know, Trevor Lawrence was a big thing, but he wasn't Tua. And Mac Jones, who we've seen be a capable NFL quarterback, sat on the bench for 4 years or whatever, 3 or 4 years behind Tua. He was a monster QB prospect. And just because of, and maybe it is, like, we'll see. Maybe he does.
Also, it's just because Herbert went right behind him and everyone just wants to be like, LOL Dolphins, you know, Herbert's so good. People forget that Herbert was like shitty at Oregon. He really was.
He didn't do shit.
He was not good. Yeah.
He didn't even win that much. And his numbers were really not very good. But everybody, you know, was excited about him for the NFL because of the tools, which clearly that was smart. But people have just written off Tua so fast where I just want to be on the other side. Again, like you said, maybe, you know, this is pretty bullish for Tua from a weaponry standpoint now and a coaching staff standpoint. So maybe he does get steamed really far, but just the sentiment that I always see on Tua is so far out on him that I actually kind of find it hard to believe. You know, we do the thing every year where it's like all the weapons on this offense go, you know, in the top whatever rounds, but the quarterback goes late. And usually it actually makes sense. Like Big Ben last year. Right.
That was the one. Cause it's like, you're middling it that like, maybe this guy's good. Maybe this guy's good. And one of them probably fails, but it's like good odds, but this is going to be crazy because the Chase Edmonds will be what, a 5th round pick, 6th round pick probably. And then Waddle and Tyreek will both be top 24 wide receivers, probably top 20. I mean, maybe top 30 overall picks, probably something like that. And then Gesicki will be a top 12 tight end. And then Mostert will be a trendy late round running back. And Devontae Parker will still probably go in like the 15th round or whatever. Like Parker's not going to completely go away. And then no one's going to want Tua. No one's like, let's see. I don't even know because literally this is how far tuned out I am. I'm going to guess right now without looking, Tua goes as the quarterback 18. So let's see how far off. Quarterback 19, 140th overall. I mean, like Tua going behind Derek Carr, like at this point, whatever, it's fine. Carr just got Devontae Adams. But if that is holding in, you know, when we're doing these shows in June, I'm going to be like, what are we trying to accomplish here? Like, look, what are we doing?
Right. And like, I like buying low on Trevor Lawrence too, although we're not really buying low based on the very early drafts, but like, what have we seen from Trevor Lawrence in almost the same sample size that we have on Tua to say that he's better? Yes, he runs a little bit, but not like a ton. He's not, you know, he's more like Joe Burrow as a runner than he is, you know, Lamar Jackson. So like the running isn't that different from Lawrence and Tua, even though Lawrence is a little more athletic, and we're all totally fine taking Lawrence at pick 120, but Tua in the 140s, people are not excited for it. And so that was like my kind of big first takeaway from the Dolphins side of things is, yeah, I don't really know how it's going to play out between Tyreek, Waddle, Gesicki, Mostert, and Edmonds. Nobody really does. But I mean, we're going to find out about Tua this year, assuming he stays healthy.
Which by the way, has a little bit of organizational value because I think they tried to do that last year. Yep. And then Fuller played one game and Parker missed five games. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, you know, Albert Wilson and Mac Hollins were playing prominent roles. There was that, I want to say it was the London game where four different tight ends had a reception. So it's like, they didn't really get the answer to that question. And now, I mean, if Tua sucks this year, I mean, you just are not giving him, you're not picking up the option. You're not paying him, you know? And if Tua is a C plus this year, maybe you're thinking about it. And if Tua is a B plus this year, you're like, boom, let's get it done. Like tell your agent to call, like, let's do it. And that I think has some real organizational value. I mean, I wish I think, by the way, it made sense that the Jets were in on this trade, effectively trying to do the same thing with Zach Wilson, is you want to get the answer on that rookie quarterback as soon as you can.
Yeah, that was, I'm so glad you brought that up because that was like one of my last things that I had kind of jotted down from that everybody ignores that part. They're just like, oh, they're not good. They're not going to win a Super Bowl, but like you got 2 years left to figure out if Tua is the solution. Doing the same thing they've been doing, like him completing 75% of passes, throwing 5 yard routes,
3 yards down the field. Yeah.
And Albert Wilson and the running backs and stuff.
It's like Teddy could do that.
Yeah. So you have no idea whether he is the answer, but you're absolutely going to know now. And then you're going to know still when Tyreek is, you know, relatively in, you know, it's at the end, but it's still relatively in his prime. Jalen Waddle will absolutely be in his prime. You have a new coaching staff and they've been able to use maybe this next year, 1 to 2 years to beef up everything else, right? They signed Teron Armstead, that they kind of fucked up the defense there for a couple of years, signing a bunch of corners and stuff who failed and all that.
Hey, but Byron Jones is still good. It's still, they'll figure it out. I mean, the thing is though, is it's kind of like, you know, get busy living or get busy dying. And it's like, so either we're going to just win 7 games a year for the next 2 years when the AFC West is this good. And I mean, 10 wins might not do it to be a wild card team in the AFC at this point. I think assuming that Tyreek doesn't see some dramatic decrease in athleticism, I think the Dolphins probably won this trade. I think they probably got the better end of it. Now, I will say, and I had kind of forgotten this, Drico, our buddy Drico out, mentioned this to me, champion of the 2021 FFPC basketball tournament. He DM'd me and mentioned this that I'd completely forgotten. But he has kind of been getting banged up. I mean, he missed parts of 3 different games last year, and he has had some knee issues. And I think that is probably one of the things that the Chiefs were like, buddy, you want $80 million guaranteed and you can't, like, you're spending all offseason rehabbing your knees. Like, no, thank you. And that is one of those things that could be like, we completely forget it ever happens, you know, that he had these knee injuries, or it could be like, you know, we're laughing at the Dolphins because it's week eight and Tyreek is on the stationary bike on the sideline instead of playing. But I had just completely forgotten that was actually a thing with him.
Yeah. It's a really good point in that archetype of a receiver, right? I'm not trying to pigeonhole him to the DeSean Jackson, but these just crazy freak flyers. That's just what happens, you know, when you're not that big and you're running that goddamn fast, like the hammies go and the knees go. And that's just what happens as you get older. But like you said, I think all that being taken into account, we love to sit here, you know, playing Madden and tell the franchises what they're supposed
to do. Right.
And like, trust me, no one is more like trying to knock some of these franchises. And I think more should like tank and stuff like that. I think more should be more thoughtful about how they're building for the future, so we don't have 10 teams a year looking like the Saints and the Falcons. But when you're in this spot with the Dolphins and you take all these data points into account, like, what would you like for them to do? They, like, you either try to win and figure out the Tua thing, you know, a new coaching staff, you had some cap space, you make some really serious upgrades and see how it goes. You can always look.
Also,
isn't
the truly the biggest point here that the Bengals had a 7.5 win total last year and were in the Super Bowl? Isn't, mm-hmm. I mean, because so the crazy fluke shit had to happen, right? Mahomes had the worst half of football of his career. They come back from 13 seconds left against the Bills, who probably would have trounced them. But I mean, if Josh Allen rolls his ankle in week two of the season and misses a month, aren't the Dolphins a favorite for that division? I mean, it's just like, and it's like, you can't count on that, but sometimes you got to make a little bit of your own luck. Like I think it is a, and I thought this same thing too with the Raiders. Cause at first I was like, what the fuck are you doing giving up a first and a second to pay a 30-year-old all this money? And at the same hand, I'm like, well, why not? I mean, and look, the Raiders already feel better about it because the Chiefs, their main division rival, just got worse. I mean, it is kind of one of those things where it's like, I can really go either way. Like, the Chiefs got owned and they're rebuilding and that sucks. The Dolphins made this great trade, or the Dolphins overpaid for a 28-year-old speed wide receiver. Like, I can really go either way. And I'm just very interested to see how it plays out.
Same. That's exactly how I feel. It's normally I have some super generally hyperbolic snap take that, you know, you come out after this, like, oh, this seems fucking stupid. But I've kind of taken a little step back, and this trade is the perfect example of it, where it's like, we can be reasonable and see, like, yes, there are red flags on trading for Tyreek Hill, 100%. And there are red flags on where the Dolphins stand in the pecking order, making this kind of a move. But there are also very clear and obvious reasons to do this type of a thing. And we don't like to talk about it, but NFL teams are also businesses. And if they make the playoffs, you know, God forbid, like you said, Josh Allen gets his knee blown out like Joe Burrow did, and they win the division and they host a playoff game. Like,
it's a windfall. And we know from these Brian Flores documents that Stephen Ross cares about that money. So
exactly
that happened like 2 months ago, and it feels like it could have literally taken place before the first case of coronavirus hit the United States. Like, that is so, like, Brian Flores is the Steelers linebacker coach now. Like, and it's just, it is nuts. It is nuts how much has happened this offseason. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Brian Flores sued the NFL, or sued, I don't even remember who exactly, you know, is the defendant in that case, or whatever.
The NFL is the defendant.
So Brian Flores sued the NFL. And like you said, that feels like the Rudy Gobert moment of Corona. It was like, that was so long ago in this NFL. It wasn't technically long ago, but there's been like 46 things that have happened since then, to where you almost forget that it happened. And now we've circled back to that team now trading for Tyreek Hill. You wonder, Flores must be so pissed too, by the way.
Oh, for sure.
I could be the coach of this with all these upgrades, and you can to me beforehand.
Schefter sent a tweet yesterday, and I'm not even going to go try and scroll and find it, because he sent like 900 since then about this trade. But the Dak Prescott is the third longest tenured quarterback of a team now.
Third?
Derek Carr is the second.
Who's first? And
Rodgers.
Oh, Rodgers, yeah.
Because Rivers retired, Breeze retired. Brady's on a different team. Roethlisberger retired. Russell Wilson got traded. You know, like all these institutions at quarterback, they're all gone. They're all, Matt Ryan traded.
Dak is 28 and he's the third longest tenured quarterback in the NFL.
This is the last thing I wanted to discuss was like, there, you know, there's a lot of like, LOL, the Chiefs thought they were going to win every Super Bowl forever. And I just want it on the record for people to remember. He's 26 years old. He's 12 years younger than Aaron Rodgers. But like, he's got a whole nother career that he's going to add on to 4 AFC conference championship appearances, a Super Bowl MVP, a regular season MVP. Like, it's like they do. This was kind of the right time to do it, right? Yeah. With Kelsey's 33, Tyreek's 28. This was kind of the right time to do it. If you were going to say during his career, and also he's got 8 years left on this mega deal. And you know, it's so funny. He signs the biggest contract in sports history. He's going to restructure, like he's going to be asking for a restructure like now, like next off season. He's going to be like $50 million a year or I'm out, I'm done.
Well, when Christian Kirk is getting whatever 20 something million a year, Mahomes is certainly very, very underpaid. But that's a great point to kind of like summarize the Chiefs side of thing. And you made me, the light bulb kind of went off when you said that, you know, again, we get so ingrained, right? Especially with just how chaotic this offseason is, get so ingrained in like the day to day and this season or even last season or whatever. But like you said, Mahomes has barely been able to drink alcohol in his career. You know what I mean? And
he started 4 seasons.
So they have such a long road with him that it sucks, you know, for you and Chiefs fans that, you know, this era kind of is over with Tyreek, but they got 8+ more years with this guy playing at, you know, the best quarterback in the NFL level. And so being a little bit smart about, because another era of these quarterbacks is going to go, right? Brady, Rodgers, Russ is coming close to the end.
Russ is going to be 34.
Yeah. And, you know, some people, and maybe they're right, are saying he's, you know, taking a pretty big step back. And so they have one of the guys with him and Herbert and Allen and Burrow that, and Lamar that like are going to, you're going to be a contender every year.
How do you think people feel about the fact that Joe Burrow is only like 400 days younger than Patrick Mahomes?
That's one of the funniest things is people are so bullish on the Bengals now, right? Obviously, and I get it. Totally get it.
Think being super bullish on the Bengals is like sticking your head in the sand, to be honest. I mean, I think because this will be a great time for them to do it because they could spend a ton on the offensive line. Yeah. But they are going to, not only are they going to have to pay Burrow, but they're going to have to pay Chase and T right before they pay Burrow or do what the Chiefs just did and let one of them go and have to figure it out on the fly. And Chase's contract, you think Devontae Adams and Tyreek just got paid? Chase is going to get, when it's his time, he is going to get the biggest non-quarterback contract ever, I think.
Yep, definitely. And the problem for the Bengals is, so the Chiefs are kind of like taking this long view now, right? We're still going to be competitive because we still have Patrick Mahomes and blah, blah, blah. But like, when this arms race kind of starts to dry up, right? We want to still be positioned to where when the Bills got to pay the Piper, when the Chargers are going to eventually too, right? They're going to try to win now with the rookie quarterback contract. But eventually when they got to pay Herbert, Keenan's gone. Mike Williams will probably be gone. You know, things are going to change for them, but the Chiefs should theoretically still be in a really, really strong situation. The Bengals are at this time where, yes, I think we should be bullish on them in a vacuum. Rookie quarterback contract, superstar wide receivers, really only one glaring weakness on the offensive line.
Superstar wide receivers on rookie contracts.
Like, yeah, I mean,
even for another year, like they can spend money next offseason too.
Right. It's the stone nuts, right, for 2 to 3 years of what they can do. However, they have to go all in now at the time where that particularly the AFC, but the NFL,
it's a shitty time to have to go all in.
Right. So it's like the Chiefs are gearing up for when all these other teams in 3 years have to do what, you know, the Chiefs did this year, right? They're going to have to figure out what to do. You know, can you really afford T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow on their superstar contracts and field a competitive team? Probably not.
You know what? That's actually, like, I'm already kind of preemptively bummed about that, about them having to choose between paying T or paying Chase.
It's going to be Chase.
Well, you know what? They'll actually, T was a second round pick. That sucks. I was thinking they could, they could just pick up his option, which they can do with Chase, but they can't with T because he was a second round pick, which, by the way, this will be the last thing and then we'll get out of here. So the reported package from the Jets was 35, 38, and 69, which might sound better, but the first round pick, even though it's only six picks ahead, is actually way better because you get a fifth year of quality cost control, which is with the team that much up against the cap, like the Chiefs, is going to be a big deal.
Right. And, you know, people talk about that in reference to the quarterbacks all the time, which I have no issue with, but that's also really important for the Chiefs with like a wide receiver to be able to keep it. You know, if they hit on Jameson Williams or pick your guy, Olave, whatever, pick your wide receiver that you like right there. If they hit on that guy, getting 5 years of him cheaply cost controlled with Mahomes is crazy important because you're going to have all of Mahomes's prime now with theoretically your top wide receiver super, super cheap.
Yeah. All right, man, let's get out of here. Tell the people Spike Week. I'll be on with you tomorrow. What else is going on with Spike Week?
Yeah, it's been an absolutely crazy time. This off season, like I said, I tried to like take a little small break away from the NFL. You know, we had March Madness. I'm a big F1 guy. So that we had the first F1 race, and I've been trying to do some of that stuff over, you know, my other part of my job at RotoGrinders and Scores and Odds, but we're like all back in best ball. MLB season is coming up. There's tons of awesome conversation and content both on spikeweek.com and in the Discord. That's the number one thing I always try to pump is basically the Discord at go to Spike Week, go to the header. There's a link to the free Discord, which is got hundreds of crazy sicker people than Davis and I that are talking the best ball, any sport, everything totally around the clock. If you want to play DFS, you want to play daily drafts, there's conversations there too. But the Spike Week Discord is the big thing for me. That is just, it's an invaluable resource for me because like we'll have this conversation, I'll start to flesh out my thoughts and I'll talk to other really, really smart people in there. And like you were talking about mentioning with Leone, you can bounce ideas off of other people and everybody has different perspectives. And it's a really good way to kind of flesh out your thoughts as, you know, NFL best ball draft season, it's getting close. We're almost to April, which means we're almost to the draft and then it's going to be wheels up. So
yeah. How long after the seventh round is done, do our friends over at Underdog wait to drop Best Ball Mania to like next morning, the night of? Like, I'm very curious.
Whoever is in charge, you know, is going to have their finger on the button or whatever, as soon as that, the Mr. Irrelevant pick comes in the NFL draft to go ahead and drop Best Ball Mania 3. How much do you think, last thing, how much do you think, what do you think the prize pool is? And what do you think first place is going to be on Best Ball Mania 3?
First place will remain $1 million, I think.
Okay.
But I think it'll be obviously much larger. And I think that what they will, maybe this is me wish casting a little bit, but I hope that they also do a cumulative points tournament as well. So same structure, same draft, but instead of the playoff elimination rounds, it's just however many points you score over 16 weeks. Cause there are a couple other sites that do that format. And maybe my style is just more conducive for that, but I've done way better in those tournaments than in the Puppy and Best Ball Mania. So I'm hoping they do both. But I mean, I think they could fill $500,000. I think they could fill 500,000 entries in Best Ball Mania 3. So I hope what they do is $1 million up top and then just flatter payouts and like 2x your money if you make the playoff round and shit like that.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on it. I do think they probably go to 2 million to a top prize this year.
They certainly could.
But I do kind of like the idea. Maybe you go to 1.5 or something and, patting myself on the back and our good friend Peter Overzet, you know, we had a co-managed team that finished top 10 in BVM, and like we made $20,000 total between the two of us, which is great. No one's complaining about $20,000, but like you finished in the top 10 out of 160,000 people. And, you know, that was a 9-month sweat or whatever. And, you know, it's not really life-changing money. So I do think that there's some middle ground that we can find in it. If anybody's going to do it, the underdog, I have a lot of faith. So anyway, yeah, excited about that. Excited to talk to you tomorrow. And we're getting close. We're getting close to draft season.
Show enough. All right, guys, Bime 4 will obviously be back on the show plenty once best ball season is underway. Check out Spike Week. I'll be on there tomorrow, and we'll probably be back later this week.
Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin, it's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage, River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.